As always, I thank you, David, very much for inviting me. I always love being here with this group and exploring the Dharma with you. And someone mentioned to me to announce, yeah, that Jack Kornfield is here this weekend in Denver at the Mile High Church, Friday. Okay, Alameda and Garrison, Friday night and Saturday, right? So I'm sure you can just Google it. You'll find it. So nice. So my talk is called The Entire Buddhist Path in One Sentence. But I'm going to give you a lot of other sentences. And David told me he actually taught maybe a similar topic. I don't know if we're going to explore the same material or not. The Dharma in a nutshell. But then he told me he did part one and part two, which sounds a little bit like an oxymoron, the Dharma in a nutshell part two. It's maybe a little bit like Civil War or Jumbo Shrimp. Just kidding. I think I'm going to be similar, except I have to do parts one and two tonight. So I might just have to talk till the last person leaves the room. Because David had two nights to do this, so. But I'll be curious to see if we have the same take. He did tell me the six words. Yeah. How long ago was your talk? Ah, you've forgotten it all by now, so good. This will sound just like new. If your brain's anything like mine. The reason I think the Pali Canon, you know, is so repetitious. So I like to say 2,500 years ago, the Buddha sat down under a tree, or the Buddha to be, sat down under a tree and solved your problem. He solved my problem. He solved David's problem. He solved his problem. He solved the human problem. And what is the human problem? The crux problem of our existence is that our nervous system is, I wouldn't say fundamentally, but almost fundamentally designed to only know how to be happy when we're having a pleasant experience. And that would all be fine if pleasant experiences didn't come and go. But they come and go. And pleasantness is only one third of the pie. We also get neutral, we also get unpleasant. And we're not very good at being happy when it's neutral or when it's unpleasant. However, if we knew how to be happy, whether it's pleasant, whether it's unpleasant, whether it's neutral, we've actually solved the human predicament. Our nervous system, you know, kind of the baseline of our nervous system is we know how to be happy when we're having a good time. And somehow we were made, even though there's this close to fundamental wiring for happiness only with pleasant, somehow, there was room made in our psyche to know a different kind of happiness. And so, you know, we really know how to be, we all want to be open-hearted, right? And we really know how to be open-hearted when we're having a pleasant experience. But how do you be open-hearted when it's a bummer? Can you stay open-hearted when it's a bummer? Or can you stay open-hearted when it's just sort of neutral? You're having kind of an oatmeal experience. You know, kind of a brown rice experience. Can you stay open-hearted with that? So maybe our spiritual path is a bit like the Cookie Monster. And here's a little image. I'm not even sure where this came from. But you have the famous image of, is it Hokusai who painted the, you know, the people in the boats in the stormy sea with the snowy mountain in the background. Very famous Japanese painting. But this, in this case, the wave has two eyes on top and a cookie in the middle of it. And it's the cookie monster saying, today, me will live in the moment, unless it's unpleasant. In which case, me will eat a cookie. So maybe our spiritual path is a little like that. We sort of want the upper middle path, you know. We're really pretty good on spa day about being open-hearted and happy. But we're really not very good when there's road construction and, you know, 36 was clogged for 2 years, right, a few years back. And how do we stay open-hearted when life is aggravating and irritating and annoying and, you know, our teenagers are driving us crazy or we're driving them crazy, you know? How do we stay open? How do we stay open for medical challenges? How do we stay open for really, you know, stressful work conflict? How do we stay open? How do we stay happy? So, already, we can appreciate the genius of the Buddha, because the genius of the Buddha is to simply boil it down, that we understand this concept of feeling tone. The concept of feeling tone is that every experience, whether it's a sight, a sound, a sensation, a taste, a smell, a thought, an image, every experience has one of three flavors: pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. The Buddha made it so simple. You know you're really smart and you really understand something when you can make it really simple, right? You've covered all the complexity, you know the whole terrain, and you know the way. And so you can give really simple, clear directions. When the directions are really complex, probably the person doesn't know the way. And the Buddha knew the way well because he traveled this path himself and he solved your problem, he solved his problem. But he took it head on. He was very, very realistic. He wasn't willing to candy coat anything. And so, you know, there's the before and after drawings you might see, you know, from a workout regime, and there's kind of a dumpy guy with a pudgy belly, and then he's really cut and fit. So there's before and after, but this is titled Buddhist Truth in Advertising. So we have the dumpy before, the very fit after, and then we have the even dumpier after that. And so the Buddha was very truthful about experience, but because he was so truthful, you know, like a laser, he figured out, after a lot of stumbling around, he figured out, we could say, the keys to the universe. And he gave us the keys to the universe. He unlocked the secret of happiness. And so I'm going to boil everything down to one sentence, I promise. But I also want to provide the context where the one sentence really will have power, where it isn't just, oh, sure, okay, yeah, okay. So I just want to provide the bigger context. And the big overview of the Buddhist path from the Theravada perspective, what's it called? The big kind of map of the spiritual path, the Buddhist path. Hint, it involves a number. Everything is numbers. Eightfold path, okay? So very quickly, let's just run through it. And I have a really stupid acronym but it really does help me remember the Eightfold Path. Visa Le MC. Okay, those are the eight rungs of the path, or eight steps of the path. Visa, and so you're in France, you can't decide which credit card to use. That's, I know, it's really silly. Visa Le MC. MC is MasterCard. Okay? But this will really help you remember the Eightfold Path. And it's worth remembering because it's the entire map of how to awaken. Okay, so why is V, what does the V stand for? Yeah, wise view. Okay, and then wise I, what does the I stand for? Yeah, intention. Okay, so there's three baskets on the Eightfold Path, or three elements, I guess we could say. So there's samadhi, or meditation, there's sila, or kind of wise action, and there's panya, or wisdom. Okay? And so the first two, wise view and wise intention, are the panya element of the Eightfold Path. Okay? And then visa, remember, visa le MC. So then we have wise S. Speech. Mm-hmm. And wise A. Action. Mm-hmm. And wise L. Livelihood. Yeah. Okay. So that's the action. How to live spiritually and wisely to awaken through our actions. So our speech, our actions of body, and our livelihood. And then we have the meditation element. So le MC, we have EMC. So wise E is effort, uh-huh, and wise M, mindfulness, and wise C, concentration. Okay, that is the Theravada map of awakening. This is how we awaken, through dedicating our lives to wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, wise concentration. There's a lot in this. And it's a very, very useful set of teachings for how to live your life. And we in this country often think of Dharma practice as just meditation, but there's a lot more than meditation in the Eightfold Path. So I want to emphasize in the talk tonight, just two elements of the Eightfold Path. So the Buddha mentioned in Wise View three kind of really important categories of our view. To come from a place where our view actually aligns with reality. Anyone happen to know the three elements of Wise View? It's really important. It's an understanding of karma. It's an understanding of interdependence / no self. And it's an understanding, I have to look at it myself for a second, of course, the Four Noble Truths. Really understanding. So I'm going to touch on the Four Noble Truths. And then I want to touch also on mindfulness. And the mindfulness, the way it's broken down in the Eightfold Path, is the four establishments or four foundations of mindfulness. And so I will share the one sentence before the last person leaves the room. But in a way, you could think of the Eightfold Path, every element is sort of holographic. Every element really reflects all the others. For instance, wise mindfulness or wise concentration, wise effort, all of those are supported by how you're living your life. And they're supported by wise view. Conversely, wise view is very much supported by mindfulness, you know, by actually seeing directly in your experience how things are. It very much changes your views. So, you know, in a way, you could almost take any element of the Eightfold Path and make a sentence out of it and say, there's the entire Buddhist path. So we'll remember this bigger context. So to kind of set up the sentence, we really need to make sure we all understand the Four Noble Truths. So anyone want to just take a stab at explaining very briefly the Four Noble Truths? What are the Four Noble Truths? Foundational teaching. Pardon? Yes. The truth of suffering. Not life is suffering, but there is suffering. Suffering is an important element of life. It's often mistranslated as life is suffering. Second noble truth. The truth of the cause of suffering, which is what? In a word. What's the word the Buddha used? Well, he might have used the word tanha, but yeah, that's the Pali, which we're not exactly sure exactly what the Buddha spoke, but Pali's maybe close. So tanha, and translated as thirst or craving, okay? The cause of suffering. So we have suffering, we have the cause of suffering, third noble truth. Yes, the end. There is an end to suffering, or nibbana, right? So we have the end of suffering, and the fourth noble truth is the cause of the end of suffering, which is none other than the Eightfold Path. It's a little bit circular, okay? So I want to focus on second noble truth and what craving is. And we could actually define craving very, very simply. Craving is just reactivity. In general. And if we want to break it down specifically, which of course the Buddha did, he got very clear. All of our reactivity has three basic flavors. Greed, aversion, delusion. Greed for the pleasant, aversion to the unpleasant, and delusion, or just ignorance about the neutral. We don't notice the neutral. So greed is, or craving is not synonymous with greed. Greed is a subset of craving. Aversion is craving. And ignorance of the neutral is also craving. All three can be considered a reactivity to our experience, meaning we do not connect with our experience. If you are reacting to something, you are not understanding it. You cannot react and understand at the same time. The minute you react, you've disconnected from the very experience into all of your views and opinions about it, or maybe just your nervous system response to it. It might be even below views and opinions, but it's just we shrink away from something or we gravitate towards it. So craving are these three flavors of greed, aversion, and delusion. And we're all doing it all day long. To try to, you know, think that you're not craving is, you know, you pretty much have to be fully enlightened to end all craving. But you have to be very enlightened to, you know, even like really attenuate your craving very much. We are all basically in a really reactive state of mind much of the time, and that actually is why we suffer. And Shinzen Young, the insight teacher, Vipassana teacher, has a really, really beautiful, simple statement about why we suffer. He says we suffer because we're unable to have a complete experience. And basically what happens is something happens, but instead of having a complete experience of that thing, we pinball away from it in reactivity. We disconnect from our experience and go into some kind of reactive thing. And that reactivity is turbulent. It stirs up the mind. It's restless. It's unsatisfactory. It's dukkha. And it's dukkha compared to what our nervous system can actually experience, which is ease, peace, rest, love. We can experience that. And all of that restless energy, we don't even know it's dukkha until we have a moment where we just connect deeply. And maybe we just connect deeply with the child, you know, one of our kids that at bedtime when we're reading them a story. Or we just feel their innocence, or we feel their wonder, you know? And we stop, and we have that moment. And then we realize, wow, my mind is this very turbulent, distracted, restless place. All of it is because of craving. We're in this reactive cycle. Why? Because we're unable to have a complete experience. And Shinzen defines a complete experience he's similar to the Buddha, boils it down very simply. A complete experience of something is to experience this thing, whatever it is. You know, you're looking at a cloud, or you're feeling an emotion of anxiety, or you're just a little bit bored, you know. A complete experience is to be attentive to this experience with concentration. We're not just mindful of it, we're actually, our mindfulness has staying power. Concentration is the ability of mindfulness to be continuous, moment by moment. So a complete experience involves concentration, sensory clarity, and equanimity. And sensory clarity means really understanding what's coming from one of our five physical senses and what's coming from the sixth sense of the mind, meaning all of our fabrications about what's happening. Sensory clarity is really getting it, oh, this is an actual physical sensation versus, oh, these are all my thoughts about it and I'm spinning out because I have knee pain and I'm really wondering if I have to go see my orthopedic surgeon, and then I start thinking about, you know, how much is surgery going to cost, right? Right? So sensory clarity is really getting it, oh, there's just sensation that's unpleasant in the knee, and then the mind is spinning out. So sensory clarity. And then the third element is equanimity. Equanimity is actually not favoring pleasant or unpleasant. It's this quality of deep balance in the midst of all your experience. So a full experience requires this. And then no experience is a problem if we can completely open to it with mindfulness. It doesn't matter if it's sadness or guilt or joy or love or patience or impatience. If you can turn towards it and fully experience it, it is not a problem. And I like to say, if you're caught in a stall with a kicking horse, where's the safest place to be? On the horse, get in the saddle, join with the experience, just drop all your resistance and feel what it's like. Then you can have a complete experience. It can't kick you because you're just the awareness inside the experience. That horse can't kick you. So we don't tend to have complete experiences. And by the way, so when we do have these complete experiences, we're good. We just naturally are in this restful, peaceful, like, okay place. We don't have the complete experiences because of craving, because we're in this reactivity. And so the Buddha, then I want to now go to the element of mindfulness in the Eightfold Path. So the Buddha laid out the areas to bring your mindfulness to. And there's some very obvious places. How about He said one element of our mindfulness practice should be the entire physical world. Makes sense. Your body, but also the five physical senses and, you know, the material world around you. So in the four foundations or establishments of mindfulness, mindfulness of body / material world is very important. And there's many practices within the Satipatthana Sutta, within that mindfulness of body. That's obvious, right? The other very obvious thing to be aware of is the mental world. So that's the third foundation, to be obvious of what's happening mentally, right? Another kind of obvious way to be mindful or place to bring your mindfulness to is the experiential structure of reality, how your experience is structured through the Dharma teachings. So the fourth foundation of mindfulness or mindfulness of Dhammas is basically a refinement of coarse experience, like the five hindrances, going through the five aggregates, the six sense bases, through the seven factors of enlightenment, all the way to the Four Noble Truths. There's a tremendous amount in the fourth establishment. So, and that's as our mindfulness gets more and more subtle, we go from hindrances all the way through factors of enlightenment to the Four Noble Truths, and we understand it deeply. So this seems like an obvious arena for our mindfulness. So we've got material world, mental world, and then Dharma teachings as three of the four. So then you might be wondering, well, what is the fourth? Feeling tone. So the order is body, feeling tone, mind, Dhammas. Okay, those are the four establishments. Body, mind, and Dharma teachings seem very obvious. Why feeling tone? Because of everything I've said. Feeling tone because your suffering is coming from your relationship with feeling tone. Your suffering is coming from craving. That's our kind of normal relationship with feeling tone. So the Buddhists felt it very important to guide our mindfulness. And I know the six words were pay attention, don't cling, be kind. So when we pay attention, I'll just insert this to whatever David said, it's really important we pay attention to all four elements of the foundations of mindfulness. Body, mind, Dhammas, and feeling tone. And we don't often really explicitly direct our attention towards feeling tone. But it's really important because it's where all the trouble begins. Now, this is a really important point with feeling tone. Do enlightened beings escape the wheel of feeling tone? No. The Buddha died of food poisoning. Can you imagine that? You're 80 years old. He knew he was going to be eating some food that had spoiled, but because it was offered to him by Kunda, the Buddha did not want to rob Kunda of the merit of not eating the food. The Buddha knew it was his time. 80 years old, he ate some pork that was so bad it killed him. Do you think that was pleasant or neutral? I bet it was very unpleasant. We don't get out of feeling tone. There is no enlightened cloud apart from feeling tone. And this is really important. Your happiness lies not in only having pleasant experiences. It'll never happen. The Buddha's life was not just pleasant. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral keep coming. Doesn't matter how rich, how famous, how talented, how brilliant, how athletic you are, your life is still pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Let me give you an example. This is from Bruce Springsteen. So, I'm of the age where I remember this. Some of you will be too, but some of you are not. But in 1976, Born to Run came out, his breakout album. I was in 10th grade. You know, I just loved it. And it was just playing everywhere all the time. He made the cover of Time and Newsweek, which maybe not even the Beatles had done. I think it was maybe the first musician on the cover of both Time and Newsweek at the same time. And there was a few years back in Rolling Stone, an interview with him, where he's talking about making now his second album, Darkness on the Edge of Town. So here he is, you know, he's realized his lifelong dream, he's making it as a musician. But this is what he had to say about what his life was like. At that age, my life was 100% music, and I had a very distorted relationship with it. It was my one shot at redemption. Redemption from what? I couldn't tell you. A thousand things. But music was my life preserver. At the time, working and playing made me happy. But the thing that was the most difficult was that I was very drifty. I didn't even have a place. I never felt at home, even when I was home. I had no inner sense of home. The closest I could get to it was the band and playing. Whenever I wasn't doing those things, I was spiritually and emotionally wandering, really adrift. I couldn't get my feet on anything solid. I was really struck reading that. Yeah, the playing of the music was great, but there was something deeper that was just not being touched. And there was this, as he said, I had no inner sense of home. Everything he was doing, as wonderful as it was, I guess, externalized enough where it just wasn't slaking some deeper thirst. So you might say, well, maybe he was caught in dukkha. Maybe he, who has almost violated, transcended the laws of gravity with his meteoric fame, maybe he is just still subject to pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and craving, greed, aversion, and delusion. We suffer not because of feeling tone. We suffer because of our relationship with it. And Eckhart Tolle said something very simple. All suffering is reaction. Reaction. Remember, you cannot understand to something you're reacting to. The two activities are mutually exclusive because if you've recoiled away. The only way to understand something is to have a complete experience. So we're getting closer to the sentence. So now, what is the wise relationship with feeling tone? The answer of this question will give you the keys to the universe. It's universal, because the answer to the question is the human conundrum, is solving or resolving the human conundrum. And what I am so in love with the Dharma, because it's so clear and simple. And the answer you're going to get is one that anyone can do, right up until their last breath. Anyone can understand it. It's incredibly simple. And I am so grateful that it's so simple and so clear. There's a million things people could tell you, well, this is the key to the universe. If you just do this, you know, this or that or this or that. And there's probably all of it's really important. If you could be more grateful, you know, if you could be more kind, if you could be more patient, if you could exercise a little more. There's many, many things that are really important to do, you know. And there's social justice issues, which are very important to do. Right? So none of this is to take away any of that. But there's one really simple thing that feels good when you do it, and you can keep doing it, and the instructions never change from the minute you learn it until your last breath. Okay. Are you ready for the sentence? The essence of the Buddhist path is to replace reactivity to feeling tone with mindfulness of it. Period. Remembering what reactivity is, it's craving. What's craving? The cause of dukkha. Why? Because your mind is churning and restless and can't settle into the natural peace that you're capable of. All of that reactivity is just this big dust cloud, clouding your ability to just actually be satisfied and nourished right here in this moment. And the way to come into wise relationship with feeling tone is to become mindful of feeling tone. Those are the keys to the universe. You need to wake up to pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral in your thoughts, in your images, in your five physical sensory experiences: sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. If you direct your mindfulness, as the Buddha advises in the Four Foundations, towards feeling tone, we all understand what can happen. So you're sitting there, and you're in your practice, and some knee pain arises, and right away you notice yourself not liking it. You're resisting the knee pain. So again, the keys to the universe, which is not fireworks at all, is to simply, instead of being averse to the pain, get curious about it. Start investigating what it's really like. Oh, where is it exactly in the body? How big is it? Is it intense or mild? Is it a uniform experience or kind of patchy? Does it change? All of that you're doing wordlessly, you're investigating with mindfulness. And as you do that, at some point you do that enough times in your practice, and you stumble across the insight, oh my God, I'm okay with knee pain. Or I'm okay with an itch in my ear. I don't have to scratch it. I'm just simply replacing the desire, read craving, to scratch with curiosity, with mindfulness. And that right there is a little mini nibbana that is a stand-in for the entire path. You understand how the Buddhist path works when you have that insight. And then you understand that the Buddha might have died of food poisoning, but he had no mental suffering around it. In theory, a fully enlightened being could have their arm chopped off, there might be excruciating pain in the body, and there's no mental suffering around it. And this isn't just, you know, pie in the sky. This isn't just the Buddha, this is the Arhant. Anyone who's fully awakened. This is a human experience. Our nervous system is capable of this. And I always like to think, you know, I was sort of a jock as a kid, and I enjoy sports as an adult, to play and to watch. And part of the enjoyment is just the mastery of athletes. And, you know, athletes have worked incredibly hard to develop a skill. Now, what's sad is the skill has a before and an after, but then an after that, because all athletes age out of their prime. And isn't it shocking, you know, like how young athletes age out of their prime? Some like pup, like Roger Federer, you know, like, what is he now, 36, right? He's still just hanging in there, where no one can believe he's still as competitive as he is, because he's so old, he's 36. You know, my favorite soccer player, Lionel Messi, everyone's saying, well, he's going to start losing it soon. He's 31, you know. But what if we could take that devotion, that dedication to their, you know, their practice, and take that level and apply it to our own practice. Because up until the day you die, you know, unless you end up in a coma, you can practice mindfulness and you can bring your attention to feeling tone. And by bringing your attention to feeling tone, you cut craving. So the reason this sentence is so potent is because, you can look at the thousands and thousands and thousands of pages in the Pali Canon. Every single teaching points to this sentence. So if you look at the 12 links of dependent origination, which is reams and reams of volumes of commentaries, the understanding of those 12 links is that we can cut our suffering between feeling tone and craving, right? So craving, a feeling tone, I believe, I always get the numbers a little mixed up. I'm pretty sure it's 6 and craving is 7th, or it might be 7 and 8. Anyway, all the links go around. And we break the chain of dependent origination between feeling tone and craving with mindfulness. So the four noble truths through the truth of craving is encapsulated in this sentence, right? Because we are coming out of craving when we replace reactivity with mindfulness. And we're practicing the four foundations of mindfulness. You know, we're engaging the whole Eightfold Path when we practice mindfulness of feeling tone. So, I hope from this you're going to be interested in waking up to feeling tone. And so I'm just going to guide us in a little bit of practice around this. So if we could just come into upright and relaxed posture. Closing our eyes. I'll guide a little bit, but I want to start by saying the pitfall of opening to feeling tone is it can be an intellectual exercise where you hear something or feel something in the body and you sort of decide what the feeling tone is with your mind. So we want to avoid that. We're going to start by opening to sound. And we want to just simply notice whatever sound we hear. Of course, now the heater's off, so we don't have anything very strong to hear. But let's just listen. Whatever sound you hear, just notice feeling tone. Is it obviously pleasant or obviously unpleasant? If it's neither of those, then it's neutral. This is the way to avoid debate. If there's any debate at all, if it's not just blatantly pleasant or blatantly unpleasant, then just call it neutral. I'll just kind of, how about this? I'll just blah, 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 so I can make a sound. Blah, blah, blah. Just notice as you hear, blah, blah, blah. Obviously pleasant, or obviously unpleasant, or neutral. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 blah. And let's turn our attention now to body. Just let your mind go. Wherever it's called in the body, whatever sensation attention goes to, rest your attention here. Is it obviously pleasant? If so, then you can make a mental note, pleasant. Is it obviously unpleasant? Then make a mental note, unpleasant. Otherwise, neutral. And now just let your attention go somewhere else in the body. Wherever your mind goes, rest the attention here and notice feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And now you can open your attention to include sound again. Now sound and sensation. Let your attention go wherever it's called. Rest in that experience long enough to get a sense of feeling tone. And make the mental note, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Big sound. Let's all just tune into the sound of the vent. And notice you might have thoughts or images about the sound, but those aren't the sound. Just see if you can really hear the sound itself. And hear the sound, and then from the sound can come the flavor of feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Okay, so just a little brief experience, but I'm just curious, any questions about working with feeling tone and mindfulness or something else? Just have time for one or two. Please. Yeah. Yeah. So if we take the sentence, maybe for you, you know, the sentence is a little more helpful if it says replacing reacting to feeling tone with being curious about it. It's very similar to, there's so much curiosity in mindfulness, so that's another way to say it. Please.
Being curious is paying.
Yes, absolutely. Remember what Shinzen said, our curiosity has this kind of concentration to it. The more we can just kind of be continuously curious, keep being curious, then the afflictions don't afflict you so much. Do you think that sentence has power? Does it make sense to you? Why that sentence captures so much of the path? I hope so. Who wants to try to repeat it? What's the sentence? I can repeat it, but please. Okay. Good. It's better if you repeat it. There you go. Thank you. Okay, so we'll end here. Let's just dedicate the merit. If we could just close our eyes. May the merit of our practice, the goodness in our willingness to sit with our experience just as it is, the patience, the effort, the wisdom that comes from practice, may all of this ripple out and be of benefit in a world that needs help. May our practice help us be more effective in making this world a better place. May it be so. May all beings be truly happy and free. May each of us awaken in this very life. Thank you.